DW Deutsche Welle. Living Planet.
From DW Studios in Bonn, this is Living Planet, and I'm Charlotte Lomas. On this week's show, we'll take a look at climate politics. Are the world's most influential climate lobbyists good or bad for the climate?
So in general, the companies that are deemed to be the most powerful in working against climate policies are fossil fuel companies, while the ones who are the most powerful in working for climate policies are in the tech and consumer goods sectors.
Is Norway's push for oil threatening its climate targets?
Norway is today the seventh biggest exporter of greenhouse gas emissions in the world, which means that it will make a difference if Norway makes the necessary decision to not search for more oil.
And why has the environment not been a German election issue? All that and more coming up. The UN Climate Conference is on the horizon, and I mean literally, it's right outside my window here. You can see the cranes, the hard hats, and hear the constant buzzing of construction in preparation. Just 6 weeks from now, world leaders will meet here in Bonn to discuss the details of the Paris Climate Accord. So far, 162 of the 197 countries that signed the international agreement have also ratified it in order to keep global warming well below the 2-degree threshold. As governments around the world implement legislation to fight climate change, companies are lobbying to give their input into those new laws. But a new report by UK think tank Influence Map has found that out of the 50 most influential companies shaping this policy, 35 of them are trying to block efforts to fight climate change. For more on this report, I spoke with DW's Dave Keating, who's in Tallinn, Estonia, at a meeting of EU energy ministers. So, Dave, what are these companies trying to achieve?
Well, it's meetings like this one in Tallinn that companies are so eager to influence. Energy ministers from each of the EU's 28 member states are here discussing new climate laws that will come into effect in the coming years. And at a meeting like this, you see plenty of lobbyists swirling around the sidelines. This new report being presented this week by the UK think tank Influence Map wanted to quantify this lobbying activity for the first time, actually. They looked at the 250 largest listed non-state-owned industrial corporations in the whole world, and they used a variety of metrics to determine the 50 that are the most influential in shaping climate policy. And the report concluded that out of those 50, 35 are trying to block efforts to fight climate change.
So which companies does the report deem to be working against climate efforts?
Those 35 deemed to be working against the efforts include U.S. oil giant ExxonMobil, whose former CEO Rex Tillerson is now U.S. Secretary of State, Koch Industries, the company owned by David and Charles Koch, who are two powerful kingmakers in U.S. politics known as the Koch brothers, and BASF, the German chemical company, which is the largest chemical producer in the world. So it ran the gamut, but a lot of companies involved in the fossil fuel industries. But that list of people trying to, that the people that the report deems to be stymieing climate legislation also included a bunch of automakers. It included BMW, Ford, GM. But other companies were deemed to be both influential lobbyists and climate champions. These companies, they included tech giant Apple, the Dutch-British consumer goods company Unilever. They're all championing policies that support their own decarbonization plans. The Japanese automaker Nissan has also been influential in pushing for e-mobility policies, since actually Nissan is far in the lead for producing electric cars. So they want legislation that helps them along that path. So in general, the companies that are deemed to be the most powerful in working against climate policies are fossil fuel companies, while the one who are the most powerful in working for climate policies are in the tech and consumer goods sectors. IKEA and Nestle were also on the list working for climate policies. Electric utilities like EDF were also deemed to be lobbying for policies to fight climate change, because those utilities, they want a predictable regulatory framework going forward.
There are already a lot of rankings of companies' performance on climate issues. What sets this one apart?
Well, those other reports have looked at a company's impact purely on their greenhouse gas emissions. But this report, which is being presented in New York on the 21st of September, it's an attempt to shift away from that practice. So for some companies, an equally, if not more important impact could be their influencing of climate-related public discourse and policy with governments around the world. So, for example, last month, Harvard researchers found that ExxonMobil had misled the public over a multi-decade period on climate change, and that factor is not currently reflected in mainstream corporate metrics. So it's not reflected in their sustainability reporting or anything like that. So the report's authors say that leaving the lobbying activity out of these assessments could be misleading to shareholders because it's giving an inaccurate portrayal of sustainability performance, and that could mean a systemic risk that will impact portfolios for investors. And actually, the report was partly spurred by a decision from ExxonMobil shareholders earlier this year to demand that the company make a climate risk assessment in order to determine their own exposure.
So what's the takeaway message from this report? Is it that companies are standing in the way of solutions to climate change?
Well, it's not all bad news for the climate, actually. The research shows that the group of active and pro-climate companies has actually expanded noticeably in the last 2 years since the Paris Climate Agreement was signed. And there was, in fact, an uptick in pro-climate policy lobbying after the election of Donald Trump in the 2016 U.S. election. Trump has, of course, promised to pull the U.S. out of the Paris Climate Agreement. The report predicts that this trend is likely to continue as more large corporations around the world accept that the Paris Agreement will be the main energy policy framework for the world going forward. So they want to lobby for legislation that gets countries to the goals they committed to in Paris, but in a predictable and consistent way that gives them investment certainty going forward. I think what the report shows in general is that we're still looking at a legacy situation where companies were resisting strict climate laws because of a kind of natural resistance to climate change. But the Paris Agreement was a signal to businesses that we really are entering a new regime here, so they'd better position themselves to capitalize on that energy transition as much as possible. And that's why I think you're going to see a lot of lobbying on the sidelines of the next Conference of the Parties for the UN meeting in Bonn in November, where a lot of the rules around the Paris Agreement are going to be hashed out.
And what does all this lobbying actually look like in practice?
It's always on the sidelines of policymaking. You know, lobbying is a word that conjures up a lot of negative images in people's heads, but it simply means talking to lawmakers to make your opinion known. So when an NGO like Greenpeace launches a campaign to convince a government to implement, let's say, subsidies for renewable energy, that's lobbying. And when an individual citizen calls their MP or their congressperson to express anger over a new law, that's lobbying. But of course, when we're talking about giant corporations, the lobbying is much more involved. So it means arranging lunches, meetings with lawmakers, maybe hosting events in capitals like Washington and Brussels, or even launching media campaigns to whip up public pressure against a law. We've seen this in the U.S. with advertisements for so-called clean coal. Those were meant to oppose the Obama administration's clean power plan, which was the strategic goal to meet the Paris agreements. But we've also seen it here in Europe with companies lobbying, for instance, for the EU to implement policies to raise the price of carbon in the emissions trading scheme. Now, that's actually lobbying for climate legislation. Those companies want a higher price to motivate more investment and better returns for their renewable energy products, for instance. So lawmakers at meetings like this one here in Tallinn are hearing input from a lot of different directions. And while most of that input from companies does seem to be rather rather conservative for the moment, there are signs that this is changing.
DW's Dave Keating there talking about influential climate lobbyists. Next, we turn to Norway, where voters decided last week to keep the country's far-right government coalition in power for another 4 years. For the first time, the future of Norway's petroleum sector was a key election issue. More and more Norwegians are demanding the country wean itself off fossil fuels as soon as possible. But Norway's oil fund is the world's largest sovereign wealth fund, worth a staggering $1 trillion. And the government is pushing to open up new areas of the Arctic North for exploration, as Lars Bevanger reports from Oslo.
This month, Norwegian voters returned Erna Solberg and her right-wing coalition to another 4 years in power. The Conservatives want to open up new oil fields in the Arctic. The leader of coalition partner the Progress Party, Siv Jensen, is one of many climate change sceptics in her party. For environmentalists here, this was not the election result they'd been hoping for. Truls Gullofsen is head of Greenpeace Norway.
The election campaign was really encouraging during the summer. It was very good election work from the smaller environmentally friendly parties to raise the issue of oil, why we need to phase out our reliance on oil, why we need to keep it in the ground to protect the climate, which created a really interesting debate. But the big parties were standing as a solid block against any commitment to change our oil dependency and oil drilling pathways.
Norway's petroleum industry employs nearly 7% of the total workforce, and it makes up some 40% of the country's total exports. None of the major parties, including the opposition Labour Party, are ready to put the brakes on before the reserves actually run out. Yet the government argues it is aware of the changes that must come because of Norway's commitment to the Paris Agreement and its desire to be seen as a green leader, but also because the future economy depends on it. Vidar Helgesen from the Conservative Party is Norway's environment minister. And just minutes after realising voters had given his government another 4 years mandate, he told me he'd already started thinking about the transformation Norway is now facing.
It will be important, and we have started. There is no country that is electrifying transport faster and broader than Norway. We're developing a strategy for green competitiveness. We're seeing that the golden era of oil is behind us. We're seeing that given the international energy and transportation revolutions, we will see increased demand risk in oil.
How important do you think it was for the voters, this issue? Do you think that won you the election, or were other issues more important, do you think?
Well, I think the way we've handled the downturn and the crash in oil prices...
You spent more of the oil money to handle that crisis.
Yes, but that's how you do it. When the economy is faring badly, you need to inject more money. But we've also said and been very clear in this election campaign that as the economy is now recovering, budgets will be tighter going forward, and we need to continue the long-term transformation of the Norwegian economy. We've handled the downturn in oil prices, but we're going to transform into the low-carbon and low-emission society.
In 2014, Norway got a taste of what's to come when oil prices suddenly fell by 40%. 50,000 petroleum sector jobs disappeared. The government dipped deep into the country's enormous petroleum fund, now worth some $1 trillion, to get the economy up and running again. It worked. But it was a wake-up call for voters here, for whom the environment and oil have become top priorities. What have been the most important issues for you during this election?
The environment, no doubt. I don't know, for me it's that we try to go away from the oil, start using renewable energy sources more.
How quickly do you see this country weaning itself off the petroleum sector and find a decent alternative?
I don't know, it's hard, it's very hard to say. We're from Rogaland, where oil is very important for very many people, many jobs.
It's a huge question. I think it's important that we can think it's possible to make workplaces in another way. Some on the far right is talking about that it's going to be a huge crisis in the job market if we are going to just stop drilling for oil, but I think it's more like if we do not start to change this now, it will be a huge work crisis in maybe 20, 30 years.
I think we depend on the oil industry for many years because it takes time to build up the new industry. Of course, we have the fishing industry and the shipping, but I think we need oil industry for many years.
The government will keep opening up new fields for exploration in the Arctic North as traditional North Sea wells are drying up. Smaller opposition parties argue against opening up new oil and gas fields, but largely accept the current production must be allowed to come to its natural end. The only political party in Parliament arguing for shutting down petroleum production long before the reserves run out is the Greens. Rasmus Hansson is their leader.
Norway is today the seventh biggest exporter of greenhouse gas emissions in the world, which means that it will make a difference if Norway makes the necessary decision to not search for more oil. And the signal that an advanced oil and gas nation like Norway takes the responsibility of saying, this is it. This was a very nice period, we profited from it, but now we move on. That's a very strong signal.
Norway has set the ambitious target of becoming climate neutral by 2030. Yet, with continuing petroleum exploration, this can only be achieved through carbon trading schemes, which critics argue is not a sustainable solution in the long run. The government will also have to consider the risk of investing in oil and gas, as demand for it looks set to fall with the electrification of cars and as the rise in renewables continues unabated. Lars Bevanger, DW, Oslo.
Elections are just around the corner here in Germany, a leading country in the so-called Energiewende, the transition from nuclear energy and fossil fuels to renewables. With issues like Europe and migration at the forefront of many of the party's political agendas, we wanted to know just how important environmental issues are for voters here. DW's Louise Osborne went to find out in the capital, Berlin.
Ohne Umwelt geht's ja nicht mehr in unserem.
Without the environment, our lives can't continue, nor that of our grandchildren and great-grandchildren. That's also important. But first, it's people that are important. And those must go who have long been in power and done nothing for the poor.
Und hat nichts für die Armen getan.
Die Entscheidung ist insbesondere die Arbeitsplatzsicherung.
My decision is based on jobs, how they will develop in the future and how the world of work will evolve. And then naturally the environment, in particular climate change, that we have already felt here more or less. Or like in the US, where it has caused a huge catastrophe, these tornadoes or hurricanes that will continue in the future if we are not careful.
Und das wird sich jetzt noch in der Zukunft forcieren, wenn man nicht aufpasst.
Ich habe das Gefühl, ehrlich gesagt, dass keine der Parteien.
Honestly, I have the feeling that none of the parties has the appropriate measures as part of their programs. Of course, the Greens have environment as a core part of their program, but if you look at how the environmental catastrophes are forecast to develop over the next decades, then it's all pretty lame.
Dann ist das alles noch ziemlich lasch.
Ich glaube, es ist schwierig, halt eine Partei zu finden, die wirklich groß.
I think it's hard to find a party that really does something big for the environment, that really specializes in it. Of course, the Greens, but although they try to bring it into focus, they somehow lack the ability to implement measures. I think people have to be careful not to vote for a party that sends us in the wrong direction, like, for example, the AfD.
Ja, uns in die falsche Richtung schickt.
Natürlich beeinflusst die Einstellung der Parteien zur Umwelt meine Wahlentscheidung.
Naturally, the attitude of the parties to the environment has influenced my decision. It's important for me that we somehow manage to reduce the use of diesel cars, for example. Okay, I drive a diesel car, but you shouldn't. And it is a step in the right direction to reduce emissions and to look after the environment a bit.
Einschränken und uns ein bisschen besser um die Umwelt kümmern.
Well, that's the view from the street. Environmental groups, meanwhile, are hoping the next government will do more for the planet than the current one. Angela Merkel, almost sure to secure a fourth term as chancellor, has been dubbed the climate chancellor. But experts say she hasn't lived up to the name. Germany is expected to miss its 2020 climate targets, and its reputation as a global climate leader is at stake. So why hasn't the environment been a campaign issue? Well, I put this question to Niklaus Höhner, founding partner of the think tank New Climate Institute.
I think environmental issues haven't been completely absent. The one that has been quite prominent is around the issue of Dieselgate, so the issue of cars and their emissions. But other than that, climate change and other issues have been quite absent. I assume that is because simply other topics like the refugee crisis or education and social security, all of these have been more prominent and then basically put environment on the backseat.
And what kind of effect will the Dieselgate scandal have on the election, do you think?
I think it will have quite a significant impact. And as transport is one of the important areas within for climate policy that need to be tackled, this diesel scandal really has put the emphasis on alternatives to the internal combustion engine, alternatives to diesel and petrol. And I think that now has shaped the positions of the parties. They now have to say something about what happens to the internal combustion engine, what happens after that, how can we support electric mobility? And the big question is, when is the end of the internal combustion engine?
And despite its international credibility, Germany won't meet its 2020 climate targets. How has Merkel's coalition fared on energy and climate policies?
Well, there's always the outside view and the inside view. So I think Angela Merkel, she has done actually quite good job internationally in putting the G20 together and to get international momentum for the topic of climate change. But the inside view of what they have done within Germany is actually lacking such a leadership. Germany traditionally has been very good in supporting renewable energy, especially in the electricity sector. That's something that the current government has supported, but has also put some kind of brakes on and is now not going as fast anymore as they used to. Also in the topic of transport and cars, emissions are still rising and there haven't been really significant policies to reduce emissions from transport. So there's still a lot that has to be done to be really compatible with the Paris Agreement goals, which also Angela Merkel supported greatly.
And what needs to be at the top of the new government's agenda in order to get Germany back on course to meeting its climate targets?
The first element is supporting renewables, and there the question is how fast do you support them? Do you go faster than the current goals, which some of the parties support? I think that's very important. Definitely not slower than the current goals, as some others support. Then very much related to that is you have to, if you increase renewables, you have to do something about the fossil fuel electricity production from lignite or coal. Basically, what's necessary is to set an end date from electricity production from coal. That's the most important. And then the second most important element is on mobility, basically to set a date when no more internal combustion engines will be sold. And I think that's definitely something that needs to be worked on.
And what are the main differences between the parties on key environment topics like climate change?
What is very interesting is that with the Paris Agreement that we have on climate change, the Paris Agreement says that emissions, greenhouse gas emissions, really need to go to zero. And I see now that all major parties accept that. And the question now is when you should reach this zero. And that's where the biggest differences are. So the one question is when to stop emissions from coal in electricity production. And there the Green Party says already by 2030, while the Christian Democrats say it has to happen, but they don't really say when. Same is for the internal combustion engine. So when do we end diesel and petrol cars? There again, the Greens are as most ambitious in 2030, while, again, on the Christian Democrats, they have acknowledged that this has to happen, but are more at the side of somewhere at the end of the century, which is really a big difference.
What difference can the Green Party make as a junior coalition partner in a new coalition government?
Well, the Green Party is the Green Party, and that's why the topics of environment are very important to them. So if they are in a government, then they will definitely want that their positions on environment and on climate change are taken seriously. So definitely both larger parties, the Christian Democrats, but also the Social Democratic Party, they say that, yes, we need to do something on climate, but they're not very explicit how fast and when it has to happen. So if the Greens would form a coalition, they would definitely accelerate the action. All parties do want to take some action, but the real difference will be how fast the action will be taken.
Would a black-red coalition between the CDU and the SPD be better for the environment than a black-yellow coalition between the CDU and the Free Democratic Party, the FDP?
Yes, definitely. I mean, if you look at the environmental policies of the Liberals, of the FDP, they're really going steps backwards, like decades backwards. They want to reshape the whole environmental policy, less regulation. They want to get rid of, for example, the support for the renewable energy, which has been so successful in Germany over the past decades. And they do not want that Germany does more than Europe as a whole. So they are really not at all in favor of environmental policy. So I would assume if they go together with the Christian Democrats, then environmental policy will definitely slow down. And it will definitely be faster if we have a grand coalition between the Christian Democrats and the Social Democratic Party.
The far-right AfD, Alternative for Germany party, is known for its climate denialism and it wants to withdraw Germany from the Paris Climate Accord. Polls predict AfD will almost certainly enter parliament. What impact do you think this will have on Germany's plans to transition to a low-carbon economy?
I think it will have zero impact. The AfD will likely be in the opposition in the parliament, but it's very unlikely that they... or it is, I think it can be said that it will not happen, that they will be part of a coalition government, because all other parties said they will not make a coalition with them. So they will stay in the opposition. And with that, I assume they will have very limited impact on this issue.
What would you like to see from the new government in terms of energy and climate policy?
Yeah, well, right now there's an inconsistency of all parties say that they support the Paris Agreement. So that's good. But on the other hand, only the Greens actually propose measures that are fast enough to really be compatible with the long-term goals that are agreed in the Paris Agreement. So I would really hope that all parties go back and think about how their proposals can really be compatible with what all countries of the world agreed should happen. And that is actually very fast phase out of greenhouse gas emissions, very fast phase out of coal, and very fast introduction of alternatives to internal combustion engines. And actually only the Greens right now have those in their program.
That was Niklas Hörner, founding partner of the German think tank New Climate Institute. And that wraps up the show for today. Our program was produced with the help of Eliana Giarducci and Christoph Gruver. You can listen to Living Planet anytime on iTunes or SoundCloud, or you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at DW Environment. I'm Charlotte Lomas. Catch you next week.
Ich möchte ein Eisbär sein, im kalten Polar. Dann müsste ich nicht mehr schreien. All das wäre doch klar.